Rain of Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
Let's open up that rave line. Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC is going to do the same thing again, year after year. Oh, no!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rain of Troy Radio, episode 402, coming to you on Thursday, February 18th. We're going to talk about the latest in USC football and open up a huge mailbag on this episode. As always, you can follow us on Twitter, Rain of Troy. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Rain of Troy. Be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, Google Play, Omni. Wherever you can find a podcast, we are there. Our bonus episodes are on patreon.com/Rain of Troy. Our email address is rainoftroy@fansetter.com. And our phone number is 213-373-1.
One USC Suck at What's Brewing Show.
I'm your host, Michael Castillo. Join along here, with my co-host, in the Rain of Troy studio in Los Angeles, Alicia D'Aratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Alicia. We are back. We had a week in which we didn't have an episode. Completely unplanned. We had some technical difficulties last week. Couldn't put up a main show. We did put up a bonus episode over on Patreon for our Patreon subscribers. New bonus episodes go up every other Friday. So we put one up last Friday. We'll put up another one next Friday. Go listen to that if you are with us over there on Patreon, patreon.com/Rain of Troy. But over the weekend, you and I had a harrowing experience, to say the least.
Let's just call it an adventure.
Sure. It was a little bit of an adventure.
Adventure.
Yeah, you want to tell the people what we did?
So we decided to go visit one of your best friends who lives in Dallas. And months ago, I'd say, you had pinpointed President's Day weekend as a good time for us to jump on a plane to go visit your friend and his baby twins and have a nice little weekend away. And it turned out to be an interesting weekend.
Yeah. Lo and behold, this white stuff fell from the sky.
A once in a 30-year event, weather,
yes,
event.
Essentially. White stuff fell from the sky in Texas onto the ground. About 5 inches of snow over the weekend, which led to the end of the weekend in which it was so cold, the pipes froze in the house. At one point, it was, I believe it was like, the wind chill was like -9.
Yeah, I think the lowest it got in terms of feels like temperature was maybe -15.
Brutal.
Yeah, I mean, we knew it was bad when the snow first fell. You know when snow first falls and it's like super magical and you go out and it's like, oh, the snow, make a snow angel, all that kind of stuff. It was just unbearably cold even to go out and enjoy the snow a little bit. So that was the first hint that this might be a sort of different kind of experience. And then, yeah, and then the pipes froze, and then the city of Dallas needed to deal with the energy demands by rolling energy 20 minutes, 30 minutes at a time.
Yeah, we'd have power for like 30 minutes, and then we'd have no power for 45 minutes.
It was so funny because on Monday, all of us having to get little bits of work done, it would be like the power would go out, the Wi-Fi, everything like that would go out. My phone service wasn't working. And we're all just sort of sitting around like, okay, it's out. As soon as it would click back on, boom, everyone to like battle stations. Like, I'd run to my computer to try and get some stuff done. Your friend would run to his computer to try and get his work done. When we needed to cook meals, we'd all rush. Okay, we got to use the microwave while we can. We've got to use, the fridge and all this kind of stuff. So it was, an adventure.
Yeah, to say the least. We were playing Clue by flashlight and candlelight, which was
literally
which feels authentic. Well, I think.
It was so great too because the whole conceit of the Clue movie, which you haven't seen yet, but that's going to change soon, is the idea of the lights going out and then like murders happen when the lights go out and all that. So like we're literally playing Clue and then bam, the lights go out. And it's like it's just it was perfect. But I did enjoy USC over the start of this week. USC took the opportunity to tweet out a bunch of, you know, pictures and videos of what it was like in Los Angeles during this experience. And if nothing else, I think this was a great recruiting experience, recruiting opportunity for some of the schools out on the West to
especially SC with all those Texas recruits,
yeah,
all those Texas ties. I mean, to be fair, it was beautiful with snow on the ground. Perfectly untouched snow in a lot of instances because
just powder.
It was so cold you didn't want to go outside and get in it. It looked almost like a gingerbread house a little bit with the snow on the roof with the icing. It was pretty picturesque.
The problem with snow is that snow is like beautiful until the realities of snow kick in, and then you're just kind of left thinking like this may be a really nice looking gingerbread house, but like it actually tastes really not good.
Right. Well, okay. Can I be fair for a second?
What?
I don't think gingerbread tastes that great in general.
Well, but I mean, that's kind of my point. Like gingerbread houses are, I'm always disappointed. Like, you make gingerbread houses to make them look pretty. The moment you bite into a gingerbread house, it's just like, meh.
Yes.
It was better off not being bitten into.
Especially if the gingerbread house is going to be out for 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah. It's been, maybe that's part of the problem. Yeah. Maybe you're eating like stale gingerbread.
Right.
not the best idea.
Yeah, the only good thing about a gingerbread man or a gingerbread house is Shrek. That's it.
Well, yes, that's very true.
By the way, do you know the Landscape Man?
The Landscape Man?
The Landscape Man.
Let me guess. He lives on Tierry Lane?
Yes, that's right. You know him. But do you know why it's Tierry Lane?
No, why
is it? Because the Landscape Man is using an outdated lawnmower, Alicia. He's being left with cuts and nicks.
Cuts and nicks?
Cuts and nicks.
Looks like he needs to update his equipment, Michael.
Exactly. It's nuts. And you know, updating his equipment's only going to enhance the total package. Dude's got to move up to the Lawnmower 3.0 from Manscaped. It's the third generation lawnmower trimmer with skin-safe technology.
Ah, so no cuts.
And no nicks. Plus, it's waterproof, comes with an adjustable guard that has two lengths for any sort of lawnmowing he wants.
Two lengths to improve a third?
That's right, like those patterns at the Coliseum, only without the divots.
Because no cuts.
And no nicks, not without the Lawnmower 3.0 from Manscaped.
So should the Rotbots get in on this one too?
Absolutely. It's for everybody. We all need a well-kept lawn, or at least know someone with an upcoming birthday like myself. Get trimming today with Manscaped at manscaped.com. Just click on the limited time offer button and use the promo code FANSIDED20. Get 20% off your offer. And free shipping.
Man, everybody's going to get in on that one.
I know. I can only imagine. It's like buying a PS5, but cheaper, more life dependent. Get in line safely, folks.
No cuts.
And no nicks when you use the 20% off and free shipping promo code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. That's right. 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com using the code FANSIDED20. Well, that's enough for us. Let's just get to the news, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right, Alicia, it is time to talk about everyone's favorite sports. That's right, shooty hoops. The Trojans are 18-3. 18-3. The best start since 1974. The Trojans are first place in the Pac-12. Jerry Palm has USC as a 5 seed in the NCAA tournament. Bracket Matrix has them as an average of a 4.39 seed if you want to get nerdy with it. Is this the best USC basketball team you've ever seen in your life?
Well, my life hasn't been that long. It certainly wasn't in 1974 that my life was being lived. So maybe. I mean, okay, I guess my question is, like, is this better than the team with Taj Gibson and Nick Young? Like, I watched a lot of that team. I watched them in the NCAA tournament. So I feel like I am still holding out on this particular, like, the Mobley brothers are great. Evan Mobley is genuinely awesome. And the transfers that USC added have been really bright. It's been nice to see Taj Eady be as you know, live up to what we hoped he would be. But I got to see them in the tournament. I got to see what they do. A, they got to close this out, because the most frustrating thing that I have always complained about USC basketball is they look good a lot of the time, actually. It's just when it really counts, they fall flat on their face. Now, what's very different this year is, you know, normally in February, they're absolutely horrendous. Last year, they just dropped the ball in February. Part of the reason why they haven't gone to the NCAA tournament regularly under Andy Enfield is because that last month of the season is always just a catastrophe. So the big difference here is that, you know, they're winning every game so far. I think it's they're 5-0 so far in February, which is just a complete turn of events for the program at this late in the season. But I can't shake off my skepticism yet that they're going to pull this off and win the Pac-12. They're in the driver's seat, but I've sort of seen them miss too often to...
Yeah, you're speaking like a true scorned USC basketball viewer.
You know, I mean, it's true story. Like, it's weird the way that I'm a perpetual optimist about USC football, and yet with USC basketball, I'm a perpetual pessimist.
Just like waiting for the other shoe to fall.
I am absolutely waiting for the other shoe to fall. I've been waiting for the other shoe to fall this entire year, and it's been an absolutely outstanding 2021 for this team. So, like, they deserve a ton of credit at this point.
Well, who has it been a bad 2021 for?
Liverpool.
So, well, okay. Clearly, but this is the transfer.
I do not approve of this, though. The transference deal is USC football and Liverpool. I didn't sign up for no Liverpool is bad so that USC basketball can be good. That ain't it. That's like signing up for, you know, the Clippers to be part of my transference. Like, no. Supposed to even it out, man. Like, I did not sign up for that, but
by the way, more depressing franchise, USC basketball or the Clippers?
The Clippers, absolutely. Because at least USC fans, like, no one's just a USC basketball fan.
At least everyone has that 1941 Final Four to celebrate, right?
Well, but, like, if you're a USC basketball fan, chances are you're also a USC football fan, and even if you like basketball more, like, at least you get the glory of other things. Like, the Clippers have just been a constant and just a disappointment that just they'll tease you with little like, oh, maybe this is it. And then it's just like nothing. So I don't know. Yeah. The Clippers are in their own sort of valley of depression.
Sure. I think they're all on a similar level of some sort. I feel bad because I've not watched this team. I've not put in the time and the effort because college basketball has just scorned me so much. It's done nothing for me. And yeah. I feel bad because I feel like a bad human being that's not taking advantage of this USC team that's actually good and paying attention. It's not fair to them, surely. But the way I look at it, on the outside looking in, looking at the numbers, looking at what this team has accomplished thus far, I don't think they're the 2001 team yet. They're going to have to prove that surely in the tournament. But I think the way that this team is being put together and the way that this team is playing right now and the leadership of an Evan Mobley and, you know, the things that get said about him, our friend Kyle Kensing of Athlon Sports and various other sites, he's talked about, you know, comparisons to Tim Duncan. That's high praise. Certainly high praise, right? So, you put that together. I think this team has absolutely the ability to be better than those 2007, 8 teams under Tim Floyd. Those teams certainly had the ability to get to the Elite Eight. Obviously, blew it against North Carolina in 2007. That loss.
But at least they blew it against North Carolina.
Sure.
Like, I guess my problem is, like, those Tim Floyd teams would blow it against North Carolina, whereas, like, the Andy Enfields, like, I'm fully, at every game goes by where I look at it, and, like, they just played ASU, and ASU is not that great this year, and I'm just sort of thinking, like, they beat UCLA. This is going to be the game where
this is when you had an opportunity to be, at least they blew it against North Carolina, not North Carolina Wilmington.
Yes. Well, literally, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That 2002 team, incredible. I thought they were going to reprise the 2001 results. They got SC to the Elite Eight. They obviously lose the Elite Eight matchup with Duke. I remember as a kid.
But again, if you're going to lose in the Elite Eight, lose to Duke.
Lose to Duke. But it was right after they beat Kentucky.
Yeah.
That Friday, after the Thursday night they beat Kentucky, I show up to school and had a science teacher, Mrs. Chambers, who went to SC. So I was that snooty ass suck up kid, took the LA Times with like the picture of like SC meeting Tayshaun Prince in Kentucky.
I like
in like I'm just like reading that just to get a comment from the teacher.
I like it.
But yeah, that team in 2001 was incredible. 2002 was incredible before they just fell on their face in the opening round. You gotta see what they can do in the tournament. Clearly, that's a long time away. But for right now, SC is doing anything that you could have asked them to do for basketball. The criticism about Andy Enfield is that this team's not consistent. Right now, they looked pretty darn consistent, right?
I mean, absolutely. And that's the thing that we're going to be able to judge them on. Do they win the Pac-12? Because that's something that USC just hasn't done in the regular season in a long, 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 long time. But we're also going to get to sort of judge what they end up doing in an unusual tournament. And, I mean, I saw on Reddit the other day that somebody does projections or simulations or whatever.
ESPN projections? Yeah. I saw that.
Well, they have USC in the Final Four. Yeah. And I'm just like, don't put that rat poison on me right now. Don't do that. No.
Do you remember? I don't think you remember, but Henry Bibby, I don't know if I think it was a 2001 team. He showed up 2001. He showed up to training camp wearing a Final Four hat, and he's like, "You guys are going to the Final Four." And they looked at him like he was crazy.
Yeah.
And they were like 10 points away, losing the Duke by 10 with a trip to the Final Four in potentially in hand that they didn't get.
Yeah, I mean, but these are the. It would be wild. It would be seriously wild to see USC just get to the Elite Eight. Like, I don't even need a Final Four run. Like, if USC got to the Elite Eight, that would be more than I expected from this team to begin with. But this is also what we're, I mean, and again, I think that when you're sort of evaluating a team, you need to judge it based on the context of the program, right? So USC is coming out of an era, coming out of a situation where making the tournament would be the sort of what you're looking at. Like, I think the disappointment of the last few years is that teams that looked like they had talent, you had like Benny Boatwright and those guys, Chimezie Metu, all those guys, you looked at it and said, this team should be in the tournament. And USC was missing the tournament anyways. And this current team, what they're doing is sort of what USC should be looking to be. Like, even if they don't win the Pac-12, they should be in the race, you know, top three or four in the conference. And then you just want them to get to the tournament and then see what they can do. But Andy Enfield's whole thing has been, let's recruit these big, big players. And like the Mobley thing has been a huge success, but they've recruited really, really good top line players and haven't turned those sort of one and done guys into tournament success. And if Andy Enfield is able to prove here that he can take somebody like Evan Mobley and turn his presence into tournament success, then I'll be much more confident about the future of this program. But there is a long way to go as far as judging this. So good on Andy Enfield for what he's done so far this season. I'm eager to see what the remainder holds, even if I am waiting for the next shoe to drop.
Yeah, you mentioned Benny Boatwright. Alicia, remember, it's Benny. Benny Starboard.
No.
Boatwright.
No, it is not.
Yes.
No.
That is correct. Nope. Anyways, other news. Defensive quality control analyst Sean Howe is leaving USC football. taking the defensive line job with the Montana State. What are they?
Cowboys?
No.
Buffaloes?
You're killing me.
I don't... What?
Montana State.
Montana State. Montanans?
Seriously, though, I think they're a cat. I think it's like a...
Panthers?
I think it's the Panthers. Montana is the Grizz. The Grizzlies. But Montana State, I believe, is the Panthers or Cougars. You're looking it up.
Bobcats.
They're all the same. The Trojans have also lost Chris Claiborne and Hayes Pillard, like we've talked about, from USC support staff. And Trey Johnson has gone to Tennessee. This is interesting because it's more brain drain that USC is having to suffer here, but not from the main jobs. These are guys from support staff. On one hand, I think it speaks well to USC's hiring of those positions and encouraging those guys to better themselves, which is something that's always important in the development of coaches. On the other hand, you got to kind of replace these guys at some point. And a lot of the hope of those support staff guys is that they help you down the line. And with Chris Claiborne and Hayes Pillard going to ASU and the Jets, you hope that maybe they come back someday with more experience. I don't know if Sean Howe's going to be one of those guys. But nonetheless, good for him to get a promo to a FCS job, a full-time job.
Yeah, well, anytime any of these guys take a full-time job, then USC has done your job. And it's almost like a weird sort of coaching recruiting, right? Because now you can look at it and say, listen, Chris Claiborne got a full-time assistant position from our support staff. Sean Howe got a full-time coaching position from our support staff. Chris Hawkins got a full-time coaching position from our support staff. Austin Clark got a full-time position from our support staff. And where are those guys now? Austin Clark, I just looked up, is apparently in line to get the defensive line job with the Miami Dolphins. He was their outside linebackers coach this past year, and he's a candidate to fill the gap that they now have in that spot. So USC support staff, their grad assistants and their quality control analysts and stuff, they are setting those guys up to continue along the coaching lines. And like you said, in theory, maybe down the line, you'll be able to welcome those guys back. But more than anything, if I'm a guy who's trying to get in to a support staff kind of position, then USC is exactly where I want to go. Because look, Chris Hawkins, Chris Claiborne, all those guys, it took them 1 year. It took them 1 year to take that next step up and to set themselves up for a full-time job. So I think it's better. It speaks more positively to USC than anything. Obviously, there will be high turnover in those positions, but USC has done a really good job of setting those guys up to go out into the world and continue their climb up the coaching ranks. So I think it can only be a good thing that another one of them is taking a full-time job. And if any more of them end up getting looked at for full-time jobs, that's good for USC in the end, because I think that it encourages others to fight to get to USC as well.
And speaking of what looks good for SC, how about Elijah Barrett Tucker being a first rounder? This is the case according to Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft. He has AVT 16th overall to the Arizona Cardinals. If that sounds familiar, it should. It's almost about the same spot that the Miami Dolphins took Austin Jackson a year ago.
Yeah, and AVT is really getting his due now, and I think that's really, really good to see him be not just he's going to go in the first round, but increasingly it's clear that he's going to go in the top half of the first round, and he absolutely deserves to get that recognition. It's really nice to be able to see, again, things that reflect well on USC. He was a guy that opted to come back to increase his draft stock, and that's exactly what he did. And I don't want to make a comparison that dogs one player over another, but I think you look at Elijah Vera Tucker, who came back, and clearly his draft stock has been improved significantly. I now look at these mock drafts, and increasingly I'm not seeing Jay Tufele involved in any of these first round sort of discussions, and not even sort of second, third round discussions. So, sometimes it goes to show it's not for everybody to come back. I know that Jay had his own, personal family things that he was dealing with. So again, I'm not trying to, question his decision necessarily, but I do think it's worth noting that returning for that extra year can often lead to really, really good things, especially for someone like ABT who just needed to further prove that he could be the guy, and having that experience at left tackle really is helping him out.
Nothing has more power in sports than recency bias.
Yes.
So that's always going to help out positively and negatively. And for ABT, it certainly is a positive.
And I just saw a 3-round mock draft, and I apologize, I forget where I saw it, but that had Marlon Tupelotu going in the second round. So again, speaking of recency bias.
What's that mean for Thule? Remember, Thule basically had the same production.
Good old Thule. Right? Well, Thule is not the same player as Marlon.
No, of course not.
He's more of a sort of defensive end than a nose tackle. But it does bode well because, you know, he's going to have somebody to look up to that's in the NFL and has obviously done it well.
Yes, indeed. Well, we got a bunch of questions in our mailbag, so let's get to them right away.
You've got mail.
All right, let's start with a voicemail we got from a Rotbot in the 323.
Michael and Alicia, great episode on college football, EA. These are the three things I want to see. Number one, be able to celebrate. I don't care if I get flagged. Just let me celebrate. If I cost a team, I cost a team, whatever. Number two, uniforms. The ability to change to whatever retro uniform I want, in addition to being able to create whatever uniform you want. But I really want to pull back on some of those uniforms and make them look great. Number three, crowd size. If you're blowing out a team, the stadium shouldn't be packed. Back in the old days and the old versions of the game, if you were blowing out a team, you could hear the echo of the announcer. They need to bring that back. That is more realistic, in my opinion. Great show, guys, and can't wait till next week's episode.
Thanks for the call. I agree absolutely on all of those points. I wish we could apply the celebrate thing to real life, but yes, let's just let people celebrate in the game. Not going to hurt anybody. It's okay. Crowd size would be fun, especially with the sort of new crowd dynamics, like visuals that they can do and stuff like that. I like it.
Make it accurate. Make every UCLA game look like it happened during a COVID season.
But isn't this part of like what we talked about where you're like, you can be the AD and you can sort of manage the program where you do have to take into account, are people coming to your games? Why are they coming or why are they not coming? All that kind of thing. Crowd size and the way that your crowd responds to a game would also.
But also, I want the crowd size to look normal. I think that, you know, I love this call because, yeah, I remember when you're winning big and the crowd would empty out. But if I remember right, like, it would empty out, like, by row. And it would always look a little weird, right?
Yeah,
like,
that's fair.
Like, it should look realistic, where it doesn't empty out by row, like, it's scattered. So at the end, like, yeah, it looks like a COVID season game in which only the families were there. The families are the only people left. I think that would be interesting. Let the crowd size change from game to game. Have there be more than just like five presets. Really fine tune it on what the different crowd size look like. Have it change during a game. Make it to where the LA schools, it's not full until midway through the first quarter.
Yeah.
Be real realistic with it.
And if it's a 7:30 kickoff, then have it be that just like people naturally trickle out at 10 o'clock.
And show the message boards with all the people complaining how they got to drive from Palm Springs to the game and now they got to rent a hotel room and all this stuff. Like,
well,
I want realism.
Now I'm thinking like they integrate Twitter into the Madden games now. Like integrate it so far. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, Twitter is a thing that you experience in the Madden games. Can you imagine what being on Twitter in a college football context would be like? Maybe keep that out of the game, actually.
That might be a little scary. But another thing from Madden, you score, you get a sack, you have a little toggle. You can have different celebrations. A team celebration, solidarity, signature, dance, whatever it is, a spike. Have at least some of those in there. If it's a team celebration or whatnot, even a fancy flip to the ref, do one of those Lendale things where you take a knee and hand off to the ref. Like,
can you do
something
that?
Cool.
Can you do that in Madden?
Hand off to the ref is not there. But
so handing the ball to the ref, they should have options for how you do it. Like, and you could like set those presets. Like in FIFA, you get to set the presets of like what it looks like when you're setting up to take a free kick or whatever, like
right.
your run up and all that kind of stuff. You should be able to preset for each player. This player flips the ball to the ref. This player hands the ball to the ref. This player just drops the ball in the end zone, whatever. Like, I like it.
This player spins it when he gets the first down.
Yeah.
And occasionally gets flagged.
Yes.
or hopefully not in this case. So, thanks for the call. I cannot wait for the game. Cannot wait to see what kind of things are implemented. Hopefully all these ideas we have find their ways to the ears that matter, for sure. Moving on, let's go to a Slack message we got from Grumpy Oso. I think Mike Bone is just setting things up for the coach. If Helton doesn't win the Pac-12 and win in a good bowl, bye-bye Helton. What do you think about that? Agree or disagree, and why?
Thanks for the message, Grumpy Oso. I partially agree, is what I would say. I agree 1,000% in the idea that Mike Bone is setting up the program to succeed regardless of the head coach. Maybe not regardless of the head coach, but to set the program to be up in a position of strength so that if or when USC needs to make a change, then the next head coach will be set up for success. But I think that's the job of the AD. The job of the AD is to make the head coach's job as easy as possible. The job of the AD is to make the program as strong as possible, regardless of the coach. So I think he's doing his job in that sense, which is why I only partially agree in that I think he could be doing this without any intention of getting rid of Helton. He could really believe in Helton. Like, I don't know if he's like a true believer at this point, but
maybe I'm naive, but I don't think so.
You don't think he's a true believer?
No, more so first of all, I don't know how anyone could objectively look at the situation and be one.
Well, yeah,
But more so, like, I think that if you are an AD coming into this situation, you want to make your stamp, put your stamp on the program. You want to make your move. And the more and more that we hear about SC situation, whether it be financially, the power struggles, or anything like that, the more and more, to me, it looks like there's way more at hand here than just Mike Bone. And so I think in a vacuum, if Mike Bone had his say, and there wasn't COVID affecting finances, and there wasn't this contracts huge buyout and all that kind of stuff, wouldn't Mike Bone want to put his stamp on the program and go out and make his own hire?
Oh, I agree.
Think so. That's what every AD wants, right?
I agree.
They want their guy.
I agree. I think that where I'm hitting the brakes a little bit on this discussion is if Helton doesn't win the Pac-12, I am not certain that that is a death certificate. Again, every time I have these conversations with people, I want to reiterate that is not how I personally feel. I feel that if Helton can't win the Pac-12, then what even is he doing here? But I think, and you are always saying this when we make predictions for the season and what is and isn't success, and you can't just put go 10-2 and that's success. Well, how do you do it? What if USC goes 11-1 and doesn't win the Pac-12? Like, are they going to fire Helton then? I don't think so. If USC goes 8-4 and doesn't win the Pac-12, I certainly would hope.
Different scenario.
I would certainly hope that Mike Bone looks at 8-4 and not winning the Pac-12 and thinks that ain't it. But what if USC goes 8-4 and wins the Pac-12? Well, now what are you like? I think there are so many dangerous scenarios here where I wouldn't bet on Mike Bone just saying boom, we're done, and moving on. But I think this does have to be the make or break year, right? Like,
it absolutely is, because like we've said before, and people don't want to hear it, it's fire or extend after the season.
Yes.
Those are your two options.
So you either need to feel confident enough to extend him, or you got to find someone new.
Yeah, and for me, the only way I feel confident enough to extend Clay Helton is if they put together a season that looks like they belong in the playoff.
Yes.
And with like hope of this being repeatable too. Not a season in which they only got there, and you can say that they only got there because of Keaton Slovis. And as much as I hate those type of narratives, but something that looks sustainable. I'm not going to hold my breath and think that that's going to happen, but that's the only way in which I would extend Clay Helton, right? Like, you need to turn eight corners. I don't know that they're going to turn eight corners.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
Moving on, let's go to a Slack message we got from Evan. I'm rooting for Marquise Stepp and I'm wishing him the best, but isn't he objectively overrated? Not in the sense that it was his fault that his numbers were bad, because it wasn't, but because he was always hurt. The number one ability of a football player is arguably availability, and he was unavailable a lot at USC. I just don't see why it's realistically a big deal that he transferred. Am I right that he's overrated in this sense?
I think that's a fair assessment. I think it's a fair assessment of all of USC's running backs. I think all of them have failed to reach their true potential because availability has not been their strong suit. And I think if any one of them had just been truly healthy for a full season at any time over the last few years, I think you would have seen more of a standout running back emerge. I think that Marquise Stepp is slightly overrated in that he, again, we've always talked about this. I think that he was USC's best rusher in that group, but I don't think he was USC's best running back. And I think there's a difference. I also think that there were moments where, you know, even he couldn't get the 1 inch that USC needed him to get because USC's offensive line wasn't setting him up to get that 1 inch. And you could have put Vi or Stephen Carr or Keenan Christen or Stepp, and none of them were going to get yards in some of those contexts. So I also think that Stepp may have benefited from the thing that USC didn't do for Stephen Carr, and we've noted this over the last couple of years. Stepp necessitates a running game that is north-south, and USC's running game, when it was north-south, was its best. Well, I think if you put Stephen Carr with a north-south running game, he probably does better than the east-west bullcrap that they have Stephen Carr doing, where he gets hit in the backfield on every time he gets the ball. So I sort of go back and forth on Marquise Stepp. I think he is really talented. I think he's going to do fine at Nebraska. But, you know, everyone knows I'm also a big fan of Vi Malapai, so I'm not shedding a ton of tears.
For me, the answer is yes, but it's not because of Marquise Stepp. It's because I think running backs in general in the entire game of football are overrated. Just because they're so easily replaceable. And this is not an indictment on any single running back. This is just collectively. You see this in the NFL. You know, you look at the Rams, right? They had Todd Gurley, who looked like he was going to be one of the transcendent talents, generational talent at running back, and all of a sudden he wasn't because of an injury. Injuries can play such a huge role, but also so much of it is dependent on the offensive line. And in a lot of ways, I think Marquise Stepp benefited from better blocking. We talked about this before. The blocking was better when he was in there in like 2019. And in some ways, I think it draws comparisons to Jack Sears. We only saw the best of Jack Sears in that one game when it was a simplified game plan that played to his strengths. And with Marquise Stepp, for a lot of it in 2019, you saw runs that were designed to help him. Runs that didn't necessarily get panned out for the other guys. And the offensive line was able to block better. And he was able to find those holes and have success. I think the other running backs were just as good. I don't think that Marquise Stepp is a Ronald Jones in that sense. I think he's a very good running back who's going to be super productive in a system in which he's catered to. And I think that more power to Nebraska for them to be able to find that. But we saw his highlights in 2019. And in 2020, you look at all the numbers, all the running backs were basically the same. They all had just about the same average. They all had just about the same opportunity rate. There wasn't much of a difference between the running backs. And it wasn't just because some of them played hurt. And we know that we saw all of them play hurt at one point or another. I think that the offense is limited by the offensive line. And again,
and bad
running backs
teams
in general, unless they're a transcendent talent, are interchangeable. And that's just how it is. It's not a knock on Marquise Stepp at all.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a good way to put it. None of USC's running backs are transcendent talents. And I think some people look at Marquis Stepp as that, and I don't think he is that. So maybe he'll develop. Maybe he'll turn out to be something great at Nebraska, and he'll prove us wrong. But you know, again, I think Evan hits the nail on the head. Like, you got to be available first, and he's struggled with that going back to high school. That was, if I remember correctly, part of the reason why he wasn't super highly recruited was because he dealt with injury problems in high school as well. So he's got to get that element of his game right, and then he'll have time to shine.
Right, yeah. And when you look at it, talking about transcendent talents, SC's only had one in the last 15 years. That was Rojo.
Ronald Jones, yeah.
No one else comes close.
I was about to say Alan Bradford.
You say Alan Bradford on his perfect day?
No. Maybe, Buck Allen came yes. as close to Rojo as anyone has come, and Rojo is head and shoulders above of the rest as far as being transcendent talent.
Yeah, agreed. Let's go to a Slack message from Dave in Orange County. If you had a magic wand and could give a USC standout a Hall of Fame NFL career, who would it be?
Okay, can I assume that these are guys that are currently in the NFL or are going to be heading
Let's
for the
just
NFL
say
right now?
Currently in the NFL, currently at SC, or maybe even they didn't have an NFL career. Maybe it didn't pan out.
Okay, so I immediately jumped to two people. One, Talanoa Hufanga, because I think if Hufanga has a Hall of Fame career like Troy Polamalu, his college career is going to be not reevaluated, but receive the same boost that Troy Polamalu's college career got.
100%. People don't want to admit it, but 100%.
And then my other thought was Ronald Jones. Because, yeah.
Because as much as I hate this, the NFL career validates people's college careers, and I hate it. Because it's so stupid. It is, they're completely two different games. They should be two different sports. They should not be, derivative of each other at all. And yet they are. And so I think Sewer Cravens is someone I wish had an Hall of Fame NFL career, because I think it would make people appreciate what he did in college better.
Yeah.
I think you can say the same thing about Ronald Jones. It validates his time at SC, absolutely. But even to go back, how about somebody like Rodney Peete?
Yes, because again, this would have been the validation of his college career.
Yeah,
that his college stat. I mean, Matt Leinart would work the same way. If Matt Leinart had
the Heisman to show for it.
Give though. Matt Leinart Carson Palmer's career, and he is ranking much much higher in college football all time greats than he currently is, which is one of my big pet peeves, is that we rank college greats way too much based on their NFL, recency bias and all that kind of stuff. But there are a lot of guys that you can apply that to. So, I mean.
Yeah, 100%. Dave's next one is, give a USC player a Hall of Fame college career, who would it be?
So, I'm going to take this from, like, the young guys who haven't really done everything yet. So, like, projecting forward, right?
Sure.
My two thoughts is, personally, Drake London, just because I spent most of today talking about how Drake London is not getting his due. Every list of the top receivers that I see for 2021 does not include Drake London, and that is a dang travesty.
Okay, can I just ask, what would it take to get him?
I don't know. Bilinnikoff? He'd have to win the Bilinnikoff All-American.
He'd have to have, like, 120 cut season, right?
Yeah.
Because I think it's really hard for a receiver to do it.
Yes. But I think if he wins the Biletnikoff, I think he's in.
I think you'd have to almost be like a two-time Biletnikoff winner or something like that. And he's not going to have the ability, because if he wins the Biletnikoff, you know, he's going to the NFL after the season anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then my other thought was, let's go with, like, Cortland Ford or Casey Collier. Like, pick an offensive lineman that we haven't seen yet and turn them into Jonah Monheim, whatever. If USC had a Hall of Fame offensive lineman on this current team, then that would be great for the team.
Yeah, for sure.
That 100%. Or Corey Foreman, which is not a huge stretch, but, like, if Corey Foreman turned out to be a Hall of Fame level talent, then that would go a long way for USC as well. Right. But I think offensive line at this point, like, of the guys that USC recruited, any of those, like, nine sort of three-star guys that USC's added, any of them become a Hall of Famer, then we're looking up, things are looking up for USC.
Right. Corey Foreman becoming Chase Young.
Yeah, Corey Foreman becoming Chase Young would be pretty big. Yeah.
Yeah. I am going to say Dominic Davis, obviously. David Orange County's next question. Change a college player to have had their career at USC instead of the cool school that they went to. Who would it be to pick? Someone who did not go to USC, just say that they did, and why?
I mean, my first thought on these is always Jalen Ramsey. As you look at what he ended up doing in college, and he's turned out to be a pretty good pro, so... I'm trying to think of, again, who is an offensive lineman? Pick any Hall of Fame offensive lineman and give them to USC, and I think we're in business here. Chase Young, give Chase Young.
Penei Sewell, right?
Penei Sewell, there we go.
Penei Sewell at USC?
Yeah.
I'm going to say Barry Sanders.
Oh, well, I love that, too. That's
put
a good
him
pick.
On the 1988 team.
I mean, just make Barry
SC wins the national title. Barry Sanders, Rodney Pete, in the backfield together on a team that, you know, had a great defense.
And just getting to say that Barry Sanders was a Trojan, like, sometimes that's all you need. Like,
right. Another great tailback you guy.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. I love it.
Let's go to Samuel now, who says, as of right now, what do we know about spring camp, when it starts, if it'll be similar to summer workouts from 2020, will media get to watch? I don't know. Who knows?
A big fat, we have no idea. We were just talking about that today. Like, I was like, have you heard anything? I haven't heard anything. Should be coming up soon. I mean, theoretically, it'll start in less than a month. Last year, it started on the 12th or the 13th of March. So maybe. We certainly haven't heard. I am not, just personally, I am not banking on them allowing media in. But the only sort of side, Mike Bone is relatively media friendly as far as that kind of stuff. So maybe that they will let the media in. But so long as COVID hangs over us and it won't be resolved by March, I do not expect any of that kind of, I don't think USC is going to want to deal. The spring semester at USC is all virtual learning right now. So until the school is back in session, I don't expect them to welcome media onto campus.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Samuel's next question says, which 3-star 2021 commit has the best chance of getting playing time / starting this year? And which 3-star, if any, would you like to see have a big year?
I think Mason Murphy, the offensive lineman out of J. Sarah.
Uh-huh.
Just because throw a dart at the offensive line depth chart and you might hit a starter for the offensive line. We don't know. Don't know what Clay McGuire is going to be going with. Other than that, I mean, I guess throw Ty Buchanan and Maximus Gibbs in there as well, I guess.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe Max Gibbs. Most Max of Gibbs, I just love the name. Max Gibbs.
It's his name is amazing, but also he's
Max
like...
Max Gibbs sounds great, but it's Maximus, which is even better.
It's amazing, but he's also like 385. Like, he's going to have to trim down quite a bit before USC throws him out there.
You're going to put him on the BKU diet?
Yeah, they do got to put him on the BKU diet. But I don't know. At that size, maybe they're ready to go with him. Doesn't really fit exactly what we hear about the air raid, but maybe, again, we don't know what Clay McGuire is going to do. So, yeah, those are the guys. I just don't, I don't expect Manjack or McCree or Mobley, which are the other 3-star guys, I fully expect them to redshirt. So not as many guys to pick from this year.
Yeah, not nearly as many as last season. Next up, we got a Slack message from Eric who says, predictions on how far USC will go in the NCAA tournament. Talked about this a little bit ago. I'm going to call it right now. SC is going to start mowing teams down. Manscaped.com, fansite at 20% off, free shipping. start mowing teams down.
And make it to the
Sweet 16.
I would enjoy that. I am still a USC basketball pessimist, and no offense to USC basketball, but I have been burned one too many times, and I cannot hold the eternal optimism that I do for USC football. So I am fully expecting a round of 32 knockout. I think they will make it through round one, and then disappoint us all in round two.
Yeah. Pessimistic, Alicia, out in full force.
Sorry.
Indeed. Darlene says, should USC basketball continue to not allow fans at the Galen Center beyond COVID, since this is potentially the best season for Andy Enfield? To which I say, they allow fans at Galen?
Well, I mean, is this possibly that USC is used to playing in front of semi-empty arenas, and thus they are fully acclimated to it?
This is true. Possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, they should let fans back in when they can, because it is fun to go to a USC basketball game.
Yeah, and especially for people who have Trojan fever. Is that what the...
Yeah, the Trojan fever is the student section.
I hate it. I really hate it.
Why?
Trojan fever?
I mean, it's not a particularly exceptional name.
It sounds like someone got a latex allergy.
I wonder... Okay, so here's a question. Just in these times of COVID, are we going to stop using that kind of thing as like a positive? Like, are we going to stop using like fever as something like that's positive? Are we going to stop using positive as things that are positive?
Let's not overthink it. Darlene's next question. When is another Rot Crew Zoom hangout going to happen? I'm going to say right now, we'll do one before the end of the month.
Yes.
Yes.
We're in.
If you're in the Rot Crew, patreon.com/RainOfTroy. The $10 Rot Crew bunch, we'll do a happy hour before the month is out. I promise. Promise. Slack message from LA Fred. What's worse to live in, extreme heat like Michael in Arizona or extreme cold like Rot in Texas this week? That's a really tough question. I think it depends on what access to amenities do you have.
Okay, so, and this is the number, let's assume with the extreme heat and the extreme cold, you're dealing with outages, because in the extremes of both, you're dealing with outages.
Right. Because in either one, you can just bury yourself at home and not do either.
Yes.
And pretend that it's not happening. Right?
Yes. So I will argue that extreme cold is better, because at the least, you can just bundle up, throw blankets over yourself, and just, you know, do what you got to, like, my argument for, I'd rather be cold because at least I can layer.
However,
having experienced the air conditioning being out at your place in the middle of summer, that is a hell I would not wish on anyone. And
I had a caveat here.
What is your caveat?
You got running water.
I was about to say, the caveat is, extreme cold, if you freeze the pipes, all bets are off. If pipes are frozen, all bets are off.
Yeah, because we did not have water. We had running water in two of the bathrooms.
Yeah.
But not any of the, not in the kitchen. The hot water was out. We couldn't take showers, like those kind of things, right?
Yeah.
And so I think if that's going to be the case, then give me the hot weather, as unpleasant as it might be, that you can't cool down, where you can warm up. You can't just keep putting on layers at home.
Yeah.
I would say the heat, because less other things can happen, like freezing
frozen
your pipes.
Pipes also,
bursting and stuff like that.
Well, I'll leave it for, he has other questions that I can speak on the other thing I was going to say.
All right. More fun fights, water balloons or snowballs? Asked LA Fred.
The answer is water balloons, because snowballs are fun, except that snowballs imply that there is snow. Snow implies that you are bundled up and potentially going to get all of your clothing that is there to keep you dry and warm. It's going to get wet, and thus you are going to be cold, wet and cold. Whereas water balloons, if you're having a water balloon fight, that means it's warm outside. That means you're wearing a bathing suit or, you know, tank top and shorts and whatever, and you're just having a water balloon fight. Like, water balloon fight, you are intending to get to have the elements cool you down. Where a snowball fight, like, snowballs are actual projectiles that hurt if they're packed or icy or whatever. And B, the residuals are less pleasant.
You are so wrong on this. It is so much a snowball fight. For one, you don't have to pay for the stupid balloons. You don't have to sit there and tie them. You know how much of a pain in the ass it is to tie them and fill them? You have to stop. You have to go with the big bucket and take 20 minutes to fill up your bucket.
That's fine.
It's easier to do the snowballs.
Because then you do rounds where you, like, you know, you have your first round with the big bucket of water balloons, and then
yeah, but you should be wearing things that are water resistant. So if you get hit with the snowball,
yeah, but snowballs, like, they can actually hurt, like, if they're
stuck in a water balloon.
Not that much.
It's not gonna hurt. It's not like we're talking about paintball pellets.
No,
it's definitely snowball. Snowballs are more fun. Just don't hit anyone in the face. Don't hit anyone in the face with a water balloon either.
Not in the face.
Yeah, for sure. LA Fred's last question. Better time, assuming no injuries, beach activities or mountain snow activities? Again, this is very easy. Snow. Give me a big old sled to go down the hill. Something like that. Easy.
Okay. This, I actually do agree. Snow activities are super, super fun. Sledding and all of that. I'd rather do that than a beach day.
Insanely overrated.
Okay,
the sand never goes away from anything.
I love the beach.
It's in your shoes forever. It's in your car forever.
That's true.
It's in the towel forever. You can never get away. It's like glitter. It's unpleasant. I don't understand why people like going to the beach.
It's fun.
You can't do anything there. You sit there and you're sitting in the sun. Hold up.
This is like comparing, well, I'm going to go to the snow and literally just sit in a chair in the snow. Like, that's not the only thing you're doing in the snow. When you go to the beach, you get a boogie board, you go out into the waves, it's fun, you splash around, you ride the waves, all that kind of stuff. Like, you build
the
snow.
You're there for the whole day, though,
you build a sandcastle.
When you're doing these mountain snow activities, you go outside for an hour and have a maximum hour of peak fun. Then you go back inside.
And you drink some hot cocoa.
Yes.
Oh, I agree. I would rather do the snow activities. But, like, you are way underselling the beach activities. I love the beach. But I will say, I love being in the mountains. I love the snow. And I recently watched a video of a guy creating an igloo. And now I am really, 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 like, I texted my hiking friend and said, hey, can we go build an igloo sometime? Because we're doing snow hikes now. And, like, I'm like, I want to build an igloo. So I think that's going to happen at some point. So that sounds fun, too.
First of all, please don't.
I don't
trust anywhere in California to have you build an igloo that is structurally sound enough to not collapse on you.
No.
And then be a problem.
No, there is an actual, like... There's a whole thing to building an igloo.
Yes, but it still requires temperatures that make it structurally sound.
No, it's not about the temperatures necessarily. It's about the kind of snow. It's a very particular layer of snow.
Snow that California doesn't have.
Well, no, if you go up into the mountains, you can get that snow.
I beg to differ. Beg to differ. But let us know. Would you want to build a snowman? Would you want to build an igloo? Or would you want to have fun at the beach? Let us know, as always, email address randomtrue@fanside.com. Phone number 213-373-1872. You can go over to Patreon, get our bonus episodes every other Friday, patreon.com/randomtroy. And remember, go to Manscaped and use promo code FANSIDED20 for 20% off your first order and free shipping, because you can't have cuts and you can't have nicks.
No cuts and no nicks.
Yeah, those things are just nuts. All right, I think we should shut up.
Yeah.
All right.
See ya. See ya.